In 1887, four Chicago anarchists were executed. A fifth cheated the hangman by killing himself in prison. Three more were to spend 6 years in prison until pardoned by Governor Algild, who said that the trial that convicted them was characterized by hysteria, packed juries, and biased judge. The state had, in the words of the prosecution, put anarchy on trial and hoped their deaths would also be the death of the anarchist idea. The anarchists were trade union organizers, and May Day became an international workers' day to remember their sacrifice. They were framed on false charges of throwing a bomb at police, breaking up a demonstration in Chicago. This was part of a strike demanding an 8-hour day involving 400,000 workers in Chicago that started on May 1st, 1886. The history of this Chicago events. Not many people know why May Day became International Workers' Day and why we should celebrate it. It all began over a century ago when the American Federation of Labor adopted an historic resolution which asserted that 8 hours shall constitute a legal day's labor from and after May 1st, 1886. In the months prior to this date, workers in their thousands were drawn into the struggle for the shorter day. Skilled and unskilled, black and white, men and women, native and immigrant were all involved in the Chicago struggle. In Chicago alone, 400,000 were out on strike. A newspaper of that city reported that no smoke curled up from the tall chimneys of the factories and mills, and things had assumed a Sabbath-like appearance. This was the main centre of agitation, and here the anarchists were in the forefront of the labour movement. It was to no small extent due to their activities that Chicago became an outstanding trade union centre and made the biggest contribution to the 8-hour movement. When on the May 1st, 1886, the 8-hour day strikes convulsed that city, one half of the workforce at the McCormick Harvester Co. came out. 2 days later, a mass meeting was held by 6,000 members of the Lumber Shovers Union, who had also come out. The meeting was held only a block from the McCormick plant and was joined by some 500 of the strikers from there. The workers listened to a speech by the anarchist August Spies, who has been asked to address the meeting by the Central Labour Union. While Spies was speaking, urging the workers to stand together and not give in to the bosses, the strikebreakers were beginning to leave the nearby McCormick plant. The strikers, aided by the lumber shovers, marched down the street and forced the scabs back into the factory. Suddenly a force of 200 police arrived and, without any warning, attacked the crowd with clubs and revolvers. They killed at least one striker and seriously wounded 5 or 6 others and injured an intermediate number. Outraged by the brutal assaults he had witnessed, Spies went to the office of the Daily Anarchist newspaper for German immigrant workers and composed a circular calling on the workers of Chicago to attend a meeting the following night. The protest meeting took place in the Haymarket Square and was addressed by Spies and two other anarchists active in the trade union movement, Albert Parsons and Samuel Fielden. The police attacked. Throughout the speeches, the crowd was orderly. Mayor Carter Harrison, who was present from the beginning of the meeting, concluded that nothing looked likely to happen to require police interference. He advised Police Captain John Bonfield of this and suggested that a large force of police reservists waiting at the station house be sent home. It was close to 10 in the evening when Fielden was closing the meeting. It was raining heavily and only about 200 people remained in the square. Suddenly a police column of 180 men headed by Bonfield moved in and ordered the police to disperse immediately. Fielden protested, "We are peacefully." At this moment the bomb was thrown in the ranks of the police. It killed one, fatally wounded 6 more and injured about 70 others. The police opened fire on the spectators. How many were killed or wounded by the police bullets was never exactly ascertained. A reign of terror swept over Chicago. The press and public called for revenge, insisting the bomb was the work of socialists and anarchists. Meeting halls, union offices, printing works and private homes were raided. All known socialists and anarchists were rounded up. Even many individuals ignorant of the meaning of socialism and anarchism were arrested and tortured. "Make the raids first and look up the law afterwards," was the public statement of Julius Grinnell, the state's attorney. Trial. Eventually 8 men stood trial for being accessories to murder. They were Spies, Field, Parsons and 5 other anarchists who were influential in the labour movement. Adolf Fischer, George Angel, Michael Schwab, Lewis Lynch and Oscar Neib. My language is not the best here. The trial opened on June 21st, 1886 in the Criminal Court of Cook County. The candidates for the jury were not chosen in the usual manner of drawing names from a box. In this case, a special ballot nominated by the state's attorney, Grinnell, was appointed by the court to select the candidates. The defence was not allowed to present evidence that the special ballot had publicly claimed. I am managing this case and I know what I am about. These fellows are going to be hanged as certain as death. The eventual composition of the jury was farcical, being made up of businessmen, the clerks and the relative of one of the dead policemen. No proof was offered by the state that any of the 8 men before the court had thrown the bomb, had been connected with its throwing or had even approved of such acts. In fact, only 3 of 8 had been in Haymarket Square that evening. No evidence was offered that any of the speakers had incited violence. Indeed, in his evidence at the trial, Moore Harrison described the speeches as tame. No proof was offered that any violence had been contemplated. In fact, Parsons had brought his 2 small children to the meeting. That the 8 were in trial for their anarchist beliefs and trade union activities was made clear from the onset. The trial closed as it happened, as was witnessed by the final words of Attorney Grinnell's summation speech to the jury. Law is on trial, anarchy is on trial. These men have been selected, picked out by the grand jury and indicted because they were leaders. They are no more guilty than the thousands who follow them. Gentlemen of the jury, convict these men, make examples of them, hang them and save our institutions, our society. On August of 1907, 7 of the defendants were sentenced to death and lived to 15 years in prison. After a massive international campaign for their release, the state compromised and allegedly and commuted the sentences of Sir and Fielding to life in prison. Link cheated the hangman by committing suicide in the cell the day before the executions. On November 11, 1887, Parsons, Engels, Spies and Fisher were hanged. 600,000 working people turned out for the funeral. The campaign to free Nick Schwab and Fielding continued. On June 26, 1893, Governor Ackild set them free. He made it clear he was not granting the pardon because he thought the men had suffered enough, but because they were innocent of the crime for which they had been tried. They, the hanged men, had been the victims of hysteria, packed juries and a biased judge. The authorities had believed at the time of the trial that such persecution would break the back of the 8RD movement. Indeed, evidence later came to light that the bomb may have been thrown by a police agent working for Captain Bonfield as part of a conspiracy involving certain state bosses to discredit the Labour movement. When Spies addressed the crowd after he had been sentenced to death, he was confident that this conspiracy would not succeed. If you think that by hanging us you can stamp out the Labour movement, the movement from which the downtrodden millions, the millions who toil in misery and want, expect salvation, if this is your opinion, then hang us. Here you will tread on a spark, but there and there, behind you and in front of you and everywhere, flames spark up. It is a subterranean fire. You cannot put it out. Revolutionary politics. Over a century after the May Day demonstration in Sharborough, where are we exactly? Well, the fighting tradition in the class continues. For example, the recent direct action taken by the Vistine workers to the boss snappings in France to general strikes over the last few years. Indeed, since 1886 we have saw revolutionary situations come and pass with workers throwing up their own organs in the form of workers' councils, providing a vision beyond the state and capital. They may have gone under different names, revolutionary committees, Soviets, etc., but the central form has remained the same, whether it was in Russia in 1917, Spain in 1936, Hungary in 1956, or Portugal in 1974. We stroll through our town with our union banners, but about the only day of the year we can get them out in head office, although this seems to be changing due to the economic recession. Then we stand around listening to boring and usually pretty meaningless speeches by equally boring union bureaucrats. You have to keep reminding yourself that May Day was once a day when workers all over the world displayed their strength, proclaimed their ideas and celebrated their success. Perhaps we're renewing this as well. It is important that once upon a time it was like that. We can do it again. We need independent working class politics based on self-management and direct action. No collaboration with the government and bosses. Real solidarity with fellow workers in struggle, not the blinkered sectional outlook. We still need a further reduction in working hours without loss of pay to make work for the unemployed. But ultimately, we need to abolish the capitalist wage system, which is based on theft in the form of capital extracting profits from our labour and our dignity. We need revolutionary class politics. That means politics that can lead us towards a genuine socialism but freedom knows no limit other than not interfering with the freedom of others. A socialism that is based on real democracy, not the present charade where we choose some of our rulers, but may not choose to do without rulers. A real democracy where everyone is affected by a decision will have the opportunity to have a say at making that decision. A democracy with efficiently coordinated workplace and community councils. Society where production is to satisfy needs, not the profits of a privileged few. This is anarchism.